As he steps down as president of the University of North Florida, John Delaney takes a look back at decades of public service. Good morning and happy Public Service Recognition Week. Yes, it's that week. We are live from Studio 5 here at First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, outgoing UNF president and former mayor and general counsel John Delaney is in studio, taking your calls, talking about his legacy and his thoughts about the future of Jacksonville. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, on the heels of that arrest at a Philadelphia Starbucks, a look at something positive that's come out of that, an initiative to improve race relations here in Jacksonville. Plus, we'll go live out to TPC Sawgrass, a conversation with the new executive director of the Players Championship. We'll take a look at what's new out there this year, all of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, he has been UNF's president since 2003, the longest tenured president in the school's history. In his time on campus, John Delaney has made great strides in increasing enrollment, growing the endowment, and funding new building construction on campus. That after 8 successful years as Jacksonville mayor, where highlights included passage of the Better Jacksonville Plan, among other initiatives. Now, at the end of this month, John Delaney will officially step down as UNF president, and he'll be succeeded by a new leader, Dr. David Szymanski. He starts in June. But before Delaney leaves, we're continuing our focus here on the show this Public Service Recognition Week as we welcome John Delaney with his thoughts on public service, his legacy, and the city's future. John Delaney, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
It's always good to be here. You're a pro.
So are you. Thank you for the compliment. Let's go to some calls now for John Delaney as he steps down as president at UNF. We are marking Public Service Recognition Week just about every day here on the show this week. We want your calls about what public service means to you, too. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And weigh in on our First Coast Connect Facebook page as well. Already getting lots of tweets, by the way. So, first of all, I would think this is a little bit of a bittersweet time in your life. You've had a long, successful run on the UNF campus. Before that, 2 terms as mayor, getting ready to make another big transition in your life, going back into work as a lawyer / lobbyist. What's your state of mind right now as you are at this inflection point in your career?
Oh, you pegged it right. Transitions can be a little bit emotional, and it's sort of really had 3 careers and about to transition into a 4th. And you miss the people. I mean, that's who you bond with, and I've always been big about, you know, it's the team that executes and that does things. So I'm real close to the senior staff at UNF, and there's so many donors. Of course, they'll still be friends, but it's a shift. But I just think it's time. I think it's time for some fresh perspectives, and I think Dave Szymanski is going to do a good job for UNF.
What are you proudest of in terms of your time on the UNF campus? When you were first brought on, it's my understanding there was some grumblings about, well, is he really the right person for this? It's an academic environment. He's a political guy. You work to kind of quell those naysayers, and I think it's fair to say you want a lot of fans among the faculty. What are you proudest of when you look back?
Well, I hope I won some fans over there and down the years. Yes, you know, the usual president comes from the academy, comes with a PhD and has worked their way up, you know, as a department chair and a dean and a provost, et cetera. And on any given day, I'd come up with a different answer. You know, right now, the first thing that pops up is we got through the recession without layoffs. Virtually every university in the country laid off people, including tenured faculty members. And sometimes that's hard to appreciate. That's the management aspect of the job. We do a terrific job with students with disability, either intellectual disabilities or physical disabilities, and really one of the best in the country on dealing with that. We have kids from every state in the union because of how well UNF does on that. The profile of the freshman, which is what their high school grades are and their SAT scores, et cetera, has just gone up through the roof. I think it was at about 1140 when I started on the SAT. It's going to be about a 1280 this fall. That's a dramatic change. And so it's now considered hyper-selective. And kind of carving out that niche, that our academic reputation tied to the quality of the student. You know, we're number one on putting students into jobs upon graduation in Florida of all of the public universities. And so I don't know. There's not one really. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of have a broad front war when you're running a university. And I just think it's a different place than when we got there. And I think a much better place.
What are the biggest challenges when you look at higher education, particularly in Florida?
It's money. It's always money when you really get down to it. But in Florida, particularly so, because Florida funds the state universities at the low end of the national range, if not the bottom, very near the bottom. And so, you know, X million dollars added to the university system would really have a dramatic shift. And it's got, you know, very low tuition compared to the rest of the country. It's actually cheaper to put it's cheaper to go to UNF or University of Florida from a tuition standpoint than it is to put a four-year-old in daycare. So the costs are very, very low. And but in the end, it's resources. You know, if we just went to the national average for funding, I think we're about a third below the national average on funding. And that's not what you'd think a, you know, third largest state in the union, you know, with a thriving economy compared to the rest of the country. So
do you fault the legislature, the governor for that?
Well, it's historic. So it's gone on for, you know, it's gone on for many, many decades. And I, you know, in fairness to the legislature and the governors that have served, there's been a good bang for the buck, you know, under most of the things you would count Florida's second, third or fourth in the country, despite that low funding. But at some point it's got to change. We just hope the lawmakers and the governors, you know, propose healthier budgets for universities because it really could transform the state. You could make the state a version of Silicon Valley if you funded the universities appropriately.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment. This Public Service Recognition Week, as we speak with John Delaney, he's stepping down next month from his role as president at UNF. 549-2937. Give us a call. And so when we talk about the political world, there was a lot of speculation that you were going to run for an office when you left campus. You decided not to. What went into that decision?
Three grandkids that live five blocks away were a major factor.
Okay.
And I just really sort of realized in the last couple of years that I didn't want to live in Washington or in Tallahassee. I love this town. And so anything I would run for would really probably be more local oriented or, you know, maybe in the state legislature. But the seats where I live, and I'm not moving, we've been there. My wife and I have been there since 1982. We've got incumbents in the House and the Senate that are friends and so would never challenge a friend. And so those seats would open up in 4 to 6 years. Maybe we'll look at it then, and I'll just have to see. You never say never in politics, but I've certainly eliminated some options in that area.
Now, you're taking a role. Of course, you're the former general counsel for the city of Jacksonville, former mayor. You are going to be now going to work with a partnership between the Rogers Towers law firm and the Fiorentino Group lobbying firm. What are you going to be working on in this new role?
Well, they have Rogers Towers is one of the city's oldest law firms and a substantial law firm. And the Fiorentino Group is, I think, top 15 lobbying firms in the state in terms of revenue and looking to even grow it bigger. So they've got a bevy of clients already. But I've already had a few that have kind of come to me to say, hey, can you help me, you know, when you get out? And so we'll sort of see how that develops. But, you know, a lot of it is government relations, business development, kind of doing introductions, getting people together. And then there's often related, you know, legal work that goes along with that. Yeah. The heads of those firms are two very close personal friends and Fred Franklin and Marty Fiorentino. And so that's made it a lot easier.
Now, one of the issues it had been discussed that you might have been asked to turn your skills and talents to was this recent contentious matter of whether to privatize JEA. What are your thoughts about that issue and how that played out?
Well, every mayor looks at it. I looked at it. Mayor Austin looked at it. I know Mayor Godbold in Missouri looked at it. You see this huge asset that's got a lot of revenue to it. And so you go, okay, what would happen if you'd sell it? In the past, it never made sense. You would actually gain money in term. You would have gotten more money in property taxes than the JEA's contribution to the city budget. But that's changed in recent years because the JEA's contribution is now a very significant portion of the city's budget. The trade-off would be a massive loss of jobs, you know, lack of control over the utility. You know, the JEA has always been an economic development proponent. They would run lines to a part of the town that maybe they wouldn't get a payoff for 5 years or so. It'd maybe be 50-year payoff. On the other hand, it could generate an awful lot of revenue, maybe some rebates to the customers, you know, the people that have been paying the bills. And The argument would be it could be more efficient. So interest rates are low and the debt load, Paul McElroy really slashed the JA's debt, cut it about in half. So all of a sudden, the valuation looked a lot better than it had under any previous administration. But it's one of those things that in the public, you kind of let a trial balloon float. And before it really fully developed, you know, the public just didn't want to see it. You could just sense that. And so Mayor Curry kind of pulled the plug on that. And so it'll probably be another mayor that'll take a look at it a few years down the line.
You think it'll come back?
Yeah, I think every mayor has to take a look at it. You know, you've got to take a look at that kind of thing. It's not the equivalent of selling the St. John's River or the beach. That's not what you're doing. It's really a business. It's one of the larger municipally owned utilities in the country. So I think you always need to look at those kind of things. And, you know, if you got $10 billion out of it and you could guarantee some jobs remaining and the headquarters staying in town, wait a minute, maybe that is worth it. But look at it another day at this point in time.
All right, let's go to some calls now for John Delaney, 549-2937. Bill is on the south side. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Just wanted to start off by saying thank you for your service to UNF. I'm an alum. It's been more years than I care to think that I was there. And back when I was there, we thought of it sort of as a commuter school. People chose to be there. They studied hard. They were really focused. And it's been great to see it grow up over the years. Love to see what you've accomplished there. My question for you is, now that I've got kids that are nearing college age and, like many students, you know, from Jacksonville and looking at maybe moving away, going away from home a little bit, what would you say to them about why they should consider staying here in Jacksonville and attending UNF?
Yeah, I tell parents and, you know, potential students, there's a school for everybody. You know, you find the one that's the fit for the individual student. And I've given five degrees to family members at this point in time. I don't think you can beat the undergraduate education at UNF. And I've been on every other campus in the state. It's the small class sizes. Faculty are going to know the names of the students. I equate UNF more to kind of a small private liberal arts school that has four professional colleges attached: business, education, health, et cetera. And it has kind of grown up and matured kind of the way you've described it. It was originally a commuter school and a night school, but then in the mid 80s, it added dorms and it added athletic programs, et cetera, added freshman and sophomore classes. And now it's one of the more selective universities in the country. So it's a terrific education. And I may be biased, but I don't think so. It's really the prettiest campus in the state when you get to it. We spent about $1/3 of $1 billion on buildings, and the landscape is all natural Florida. It's really a botanical garden when you get down to it. So that sense of place that kind of urban planners talk about, and it really exists at UNF. Some kids want to leave town, though. I've got one of those, and he actually had UNF number one. He said, I think I need to leave town. I had a youngest daughter who was a huge Gator, just a rabid, rabid Gator, and she said, I think it's too big for me, and I want to stay in town. So it's finding a place that fits. And but I think the education, I mean, it's a great education and you get a job. It's hard to beat.
What are your thoughts as well about all of the major universities in Jacksonville, UNF, JU, and FSCJ, really ramping up their presence downtown in the city's urban core? That's been something we've watched unfold over the last several years. Just a downtown campus for all of these schools.
Right. And Edward Waters is technically also downtown.
College.
Yeah, which is really downtown as well. And I think it's a healthy thing. When in the 60s, when the community was looking at adding a public university, UNF, the trade-off, do we go downtown or do we move out into what was then a very, very rural area, part of town? J. Turner Butler didn't exist. St. John's Bluff, south of Beach, was a dirt road, if you can believe that, when the school construction was started. And, it could have had a huge impact if it was downtown, but the city fathers and mothers back at that time decided to place it out where it's located now. And there's advantages to that. It is a suburban feel. It's sitting in the middle of a nature preserve, you know, kind of like the donut is a nature preserve and the center of it is where the buildings are. So, but we think downtown is an important place for us to be. You know, we took over the MoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, some years ago, and we're now going to add some classes. JU's going to be, I think, a little bit ahead of us in getting the classes going. FSCJ's always had a very visible downtown campus. So I think it can help the downtown, and we'll see how it evolves.
Okay, and it's 549-2937 as we talk with UNF's John Delaney as he prepares to step down after, is it 13 years?
15
years leading the school. Let's go to some tweets. Julie tweets the show, please thank President Delaney for nurturing conditions that nurture our students. UNF's Thrive program for college students on the autism spectrum is a model for the region and likely the nation. So some kudos there. Here's one from Brian. Thank you, John Delaney, for your conscientious public service. Any words of advice about keeping civil and bipartisan? I think that's was a hallmark of your tenure as mayor.
Yeah, I try, and at UNF we've tried to. We have a civil discourse series that a couple times a year we pick a very a controversial topic or a topical topic and get opponents and proponents from both sides and try to have a civil discussion. And it's an ugly time right now, and in terms of politics at the national level. And I was saying last night at a discussion that the political parties don't even share the same definition of words anymore and some fundamental concepts. But fortunately, I think in this country, leaders tend to emerge. And, a Franklin Roosevelt and a Ronald Reagan and a Lyndon Johnson and tend to kind of, at least galvanize 60% of the country, which is about unanimous as you can get. And so I think that's going to happen.
You think that's going to happen, what, before the next presidential election?
No, it pretty much has to be a president. I mean, that's really kind of the national voice. So, Donald Trump was a disruptor. And that's at the time what, a half plus one of the country wanted to see. And he continues to do that.
But did you vote for him?
I did not. It's the first time I have not voted for the Republican nominee. And
can you tell us who you voted for?
I wrote in Paul Ryan, so I could still say I voted for a Republican. But I think Paul Ryan has an awful lot of dignity. And
Didn't you vote for Donald Trump?
I couldn't vote for either he or Hillary Clinton. It was Donald Trump's style. Proponents will say if you do the checklist of Republican wish lists that he's going through those, it's just the way he does them that is so difficult. I would prefer, a more civil sort of an administration. And he's a little more of a divider. But again, if you go through the Supreme Court regulations, taxes, those kinds of things, the military, foreign affairs, that he's flexing some muscles. But the way he does it is a little awkward for me to be able to swallow.
We're talking now with UNF President and former Mayor John Delaney. We'll go to a few more calls at 549-2937 in just a moment. Now, you gave a recent interview to the editor at Folio Weekly, Claire Goforth. She's going to be publishing that in a week or two, where you talked about a lot of issues, including this sort of Trumpification of our politics, and you expressed alarm about it with her as well. It's my understanding you also expressed some concern about how our current mayor operates politically.
Oh, I don't know if I'd say concern. I was observing that the mayor, the governor, and the president kind of are in a strongman style, and they're different people, obviously, but a little bit more sharp elbowed than in the past. And similarly, Lenny's, that fixing that pension thing is one of the bigger lifts in the last half century. That would go down there with, consolidation and some of the major changes that have gone in the government. So it was more of an observation than it was a criticism. And it's the mayor's style. He's a friend of mine and I support what he's doing.
But strongman isn't a word that I would use to describe your style.
I got elected by a couple thousand votes, and I woke up the next day and I realized I didn't get any African-American votes. And I said, I can't govern if a quarter of this town doesn't think I represent them. And so my objective was to add friends, as opposed to add to the enemies list. And a lot of my friends had sided already in the mayor's race with former mayors that were in the race, Mayor Godbold and Mayor Azzurri. And, you can't hold that against it. And I've never really been a grudge holder. My skin was a lot thicker than I expected it to be. And I just tend to forget if somebody is, crossed me or opposed or whatever. And
do you think this mayor does that, holds grudges, keeps an enemies list?
I don't know if I'd say that, but I think there is a we and they kind of a thing that goes on in government nowadays at the local, the state, and the national level. And I've always felt it's, and I can remember having this, it was with Jeb Bush when he was governor, and he had a down and out battle with a local Senator Jim King over an education issue. And I was in Jeb's office and he was spitting mad. He was so livid at Jim King. And I got laughing, actually. He was so mad. And I said, Jeb, you're going to need his vote on something else. This isn't worth making a permanent enemy. There's going to be thousands of votes in the rest of your time. And they ended up getting along on a lot of other issues. So that's what I think. That's just my style. But, you know, every president that's been elected and every governor and every mayor has a totally different style. And it's up to the electorate to decide if they like it or not.
It sounds, though, a lot of this comes down to temperament. You have a happy warrior kind of temperament. Not everybody, I don't think, is blessed with that kind of sunny, positive, forgiving temperament. It's a gift in politics, maybe, or in any high-profile position.
I've actually talked about this in some political discussions, that there are two styles. That there is the style that you go in there and, you know, you want to hit your enemies and you want to, you know, reward your friends and this kind of a thing. And it's actually kind of a natural human thing. People that have said horrible things about you on an issue or during a campaign, and you know, businesses that have your opponent sign up front and this kind of a thing. And so there's that's not an uncommon thing. And so I preferred a different style. It's more, you use temperament. I think that's a good expression.
And Jimmy tweets the show, John Delaney is a hero to many of us for his role in opening doors for the Jacksonville HRO. I sure wish we could get a football team at UNF.
No, we won't. It'll be a long time before we have a football team. There's a lot of reasons for that, but it's
think it's ever going to happen.
We'd have to be about twice as big, and then it just, you know, you're everybody's homecoming opponent for a long time, and college football is about the blue bloods. There's 30 or 35, 40 schools that really are in that area, and but, you know, we have another president coming in June 1. He may make a completely different decision. He's a big supporter of athletics, and he was played basketball in college at University of North Carolina, Asheville. So we'll see. Not my call, June 1.
Robert writes on our First Coast Connect Facebook page, John Delaney epitomizes that great but fading American value of calm centrism. He would make a great governor as a moderate Republican who's knowledgeable and inspires pride of place to residents, businesses, and tourists that our state desperately needs. So getting lots of kudos out there. We're trying to reboot our phone system, actually. Lots of people are on hold. Oh, there we go. We've got it back. CJ is in San Marco. Go ahead, CJ.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Mayor, I had a question for you regarding downtown in a way to possibly revitalize downtown akin to other major cities. Is that, you know, especially at UNF, what about, you know, putting some sort of a applied technology, like graduate program or facilities, like a research facility downtown, you know, focusing on technologies like artificial intelligence, virtual reality, bioengineering, and, you know, like drones and robotics. And, you know, I think that would help, you know, attract people to downtown, attract people to Jacksonville, and also attract companies like Amazon.
Sure.
And I think Amazon probably passed over Jacksonville because of the lack of a large body of skilled labor, and that includes the education system.
Okay, gotcha, CJ. Let's get an answer to you.
Yeah, moving a program downtown, there's a lot of complications to that, and that, you know, freshmen and sophomores also take some of those upper division classes, and so it's a lot more comfortable if they're all in one location. And at UNF, we have a similar goal as our downtown does, is we want that critical mass of energy and activity on the campus, and a lot of things that you're talking about do go on at UNF. It's not a major research university, but it does do tens of millions of dollars worth of research. And I think there's a lot of things on Amazon's checklist that Jacksonville didn't meet.
Sam is along I-95. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, John, good morning. And still hoping you enjoyed the book on civility. My question is, to those who are interested in seeking public office, what kind of advice would you advise them to keep and prevent from morphing downward from public servancy to political bad behavior?
Yeah, I what I always say on that, when people are, you know, visit with me, then they're thinking of running for office, I said, always make sure you understand the other side of an issue. Understand the consequences of a vote. And very often, I see this in Tallahassee, sometimes it almost gets a mood that something's good and something's absolutely bad. And that's rarely the case. And if you kind of do that, I think you're a lot better off. Senator Rob Bradley had a confrontation. I can't remember what the issue was over in Tallahassee, where he was leaning one side of an issue and somebody came up. And he was overheard saying, "Thank you for giving me the gift of perspective." I don't know if he necessarily changed his mind, but that's what you really want is perspective on any issue. And it's to understand the consequences.
Jason in San Marco. Hi, Jason.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, my question is about your in-studio guest and his position and thoughts on global warming, whether he believes it's a serious threat to the state of Florida or if he thinks it's a hoax, which clearly our outgoing governor has believed since he's banned the mention of it in government text and emails and basically no discussion of it for 8 years. That's my question, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Climate change, sea level rise here in Florida.
Well, clearly it's not great that we're putting as much carbon dioxide into the air as we do, and as much nitrogen, and so it's got to have some impact. I heard a speaker say that Florida is essentially going to be underwater by the year 2070, which is 50 years away. I don't know if that's true or not. I think the answer is going to be in science, and that science is going to find a way to reverse that and pull that stuff out of the air, and it's just a question of when. And I hope we put a lot of money into the research on it. That's what's really going to fix it.
We have an email for you from Joshua. I'm wondering if President Delaney has any regrets during his tenure at UNF.
Well, even when I leave City Hall, people say, what did you regret? And I said, well, you always want it quicker, faster, bigger, cheaper, more efficient. It's not maybe necessarily a personal regret. The last 10 years have been particularly tough with the recession. Florida is a growth state. That growth shut down for a number of years. And so managing that budget had not been fun. I really would have liked to get some more money into the pockets of the employees, but we jointly and collectively made a decision not to do layoffs. So we had to kind of manage through it and manage through attrition. Wish we had more money. That would have made it a lot more fun.
Sure. And last but not least, here's a tweet from Jimmy Delaney. Thank you, Dad, for everything you've done throughout the years. I'm still waiting on that Netflix password.
He called in the last time we were on the show, as you recall.
You got to get him the password. Yeah.
He's got the password. He knows I doesn't know it. I don't know it. I don't even know how to enter it.
Well, it's so good to have you on the show. And you officially start your new role in June, but unofficially going to take a little time off, which I'm sure will be well-deserved and much enjoyed. So enjoy your summer. And thank you so much for being on our show this Public Service Recognition Week.
I appreciate what you in particular do, but the role this station plays. We kind of have similar roles in wanting to be the place where the community thinks, and love the relationship.
Thank you. He's UNF President, outgoing UNF President John Delaney, joining us in June. We hope to host on this program UNF's new president, so keep listening for that. Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later we'll go out live to Sawgrass TPC for a look at this week's Players Championship. And up next, a local initiative seeks to reduce racial tensions in Jacksonville. We'll tell you about it right after this.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington are proud to support the Funk Sotillo Foundation, helping to fund pancreatic cancer research through Mayo Clinic. Learn more about their upcoming golf event or donate at championsforhopegolf.org.
The 2018 Players Championship returns May 8th through 13th. Witness the competition drama unfold on the Island Green. Enjoy the beer garden presented by Hoptinger with friends, or watch country artist Luke Combs perform during Military Appreciation Day on Tuesday, May 8th. Tickets at theplayers.com.
1 minute after 5 in the morning.
The president of the World Bank is calling.
1 minute after noon.
New York City authorities are investigating a second deadly crane collapse.
1 minute after 5 in the evening.
The commander of the Joint African Union has said.
1 minute after 11 at night.
At least one tornado is reported to have touched down today.
What's happening? What's known? What's next? 1 minute after the hour, every hour, every day. From NPR News.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app, Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, by now, millions of Americans have heard about a notorious incident at a Starbucks in Philadelphia. Two African-American men were arrested at the store just as they were simply sitting and waiting on a friend to show up before they ordered. Now, back in 2015, Starbucks had actually begun work on a campaign called Race Together that was supposed to be focused on racial reconciliation. But there was a lot of criticism about the campaign, and Starbucks had to cancel that initiative. Richard Cuff is a local activist who had gotten involved back in Race Together in 2015. And when it got scrubbed, he continued his community work and he's made a lot of progress. Richard Cuff joins us now with more about the Casey campaign, the cultural awareness and community image enhancement for Jacksonville. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
So this thing in 2015 was a big flop for Starbucks. People criticized it. They were going to have baristas put the hashtag race together on coffee cups, write it on coffee cups and talk about these issues with customers. It didn't fly.
Exactly. In fact, it went on rather underneath the radar. It was just, you know, it was just do it. The idea was you would take your cup to go sit down at the table and you see race together. And it was supposed to encourage a conversation about how cool it is that we can talk about race. It backfired.
Yeah.
But I thought it was the coolest thing. So we had, with our music program, we had planned to have our symphony ensemble that our older kids perform in the lobby of Starbucks. And we had all the approvals. And on the day of the event, the phone started ringing and the CEO had decided to pull the plug. Mm-hmm. But we were too far gone. So the manager at Starbucks kind of did just the opposite of what the Starbucks manager did in Philadelphia. He found a way to let us in. He said, just don't show the Starbucks logo. Sit over here in the corner so it doesn't look too much like a Starbucks. So he did all the things necessary to allow us to go through with it. And I was just too far committed that we actually had to take it on as if it was our own campaign.
So that has led us to what you're doing this year. It's going to be a really cool initiative leading up to a big event, Mother's Day weekend. What do you got cooking? Because this is called Ribs and Roses.
Yes, it's we wanted to announce it this year because we couldn't let this Mother's Day pass. So it's really about the Ribs and Roses Festival of 2018-19, so coming up next year. But Ed Jenkins of Mr. Ed's Heavenly Barbecue was recently voted the best hole-in-the-wall barbecue stand. But what most people don't know about Ed is
in the city or in the country?
In the Duval County. So,
okay.
So it's best, one of the best hole in, probably it, I can guarantee you it ranks up there in the country. But he used to sell roses before he got into barbecue. Mm-hmm. And he sold tens of thousands of roses. And so he literally has ribs and roses on the side of his barbecue stand. And when I saw that, I thought, that's such a cool name. And I said, Ed, can you get roses for us? And he said, sure. I said, can you bring your barbecue stand? He said, sure. Ribs and Roses was born because I saw that as the perfect opportunity for a cultural exchange. I'll give you an example. Race and class, Melissa, are forces that are held together by religion and government institutions. It's a construct. It's not real. So these forces make it difficult, though, for us to talk to each other. You remove race and class and you get culture and traditions. And that's what I believe. If we can talk about culture and traditions, we can better position people to prosper.
And so you're going to be talking about all this with barbecue supplied by Mr. Ed. And this whole event is going to raise money to support your Guiding Success Music, Arts, and Math Summer Camp
kids.
So you're tying it all together.
Exactly.
How can people be part of this? And tell me all the details.
Well, first of all, you can go to guidingangelsusa.org. we created the USA because we thought Starbucks would be taking us national. So we sort of, we had Guiding Angels USA, but you can go to guidingangelsusa.org. That'll take you directly to our GoFundMe page that will explain the Guiding Angels initiative. And anyone who supports us becomes a Guiding Angel. In 2018, Melissa, we would give away this award. So I want to show you this. This I would have given to you, which you rightfully deserve. You would be a recipient of our Guiding.
And no one can see it on the radio, but it's a very nice award.
It's acrylic. The guy who created this actually has become famous. I got to track him down. His name is Robert Garrett. But we made it smaller so that we can present it as this. And so here I present to you, and you will see this on our webpage. You are now officially a Guiding Angel.
Oh, thank you.
So that lapel pin is for anyone who supports our children. You are more than welcome. GuidingAngelsUSA.org. On Saturday, we will be at the corner of 103rd and Blanding at Ed's Barbecue Stand. And Saturday night at what is that? In the St. John's, in the River City Mall, we'll be at Boston's for a nice little jazz concert Saturday night.
And people can come out to either one.
Come out to either one, grab some ribs at both.
All right. It's Ribs and Roses this weekend, Mother's Day weekend, and Richard Cuff, you're doing such great things. Thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Still to come, a live report from the Players Championship. Find out what's new this year out there. But up next, marking National Stroke Awareness Month. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Doug Hansard, and I listen to the Florida Times Union On Demand as read by WJCT Radio Reading Service volunteers. The sound quality is excellent. This is a great asset for people like me, sightless and on the go. The Florida Times Union Daily on the radio reading website at wjct.org/radio reading. Take advantage of it, and while you're there, register as a listener.
Hi, I'm WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo. As you listen to 89.9, we want to make sure we're listening to you. What do you want to hear more of, less of? How do you listen most? On your radio? Streaming online? Help make sure WJCT stays relevant to you by taking our less than 10-minute audience survey. You can do it right now at WJCT.org. We're listening.
Hi, I'm Miguel Sanon.
I'm Nora Jones.
My name is Pedrito Martinez.
I'm Christian McBride with Jazz Night in America. Our new show is bringing you inside the jazz world. We're headed to concerts around the country, from New York to L.A. to D.C., and we're talking directly to musicians, finding out how and why they do what they do. Join me right here for Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's a medical calamity that can strike without warning. More than 7 million Americans have had a stroke. It's a leading cause of death in this country, but it's also a condition that's very preventable. May is actually National Stroke Awareness Month, and here to raise awareness, we're pleased to welcome Dr. David Miller. He's medical director at the Mayo Clinic Comprehensive Stroke Center. Dr. Miller, good to see you. Prevention starts with awareness, and this is the month that the nation's physicians are focusing on, that particularly high blood pressure. Isn't that the most common controllable cause of stroke in this country?
It is, actually. Thanks much for having me. Yes, May is Stroke Awareness Month, but in my world, every month is Stroke Awareness Month. The truth is that information is probably the best weapon that we have to treat stroke. We have a program called Know Your Numbers. The numbers are important. And blood pressure is one of the most important because it is one of the leading causes of stroke. Mm-hmm. A healthy blood pressure, we used to say that healthy blood pressure was less than 140 over 80. And now we've moved those numbers down. We look for 130 as a top number.
130 is the top. A lot of people don't make that grade. A lot of Americans are higher than that.
They are, actually. And while you may feel comfortable that way, it's actually a problem. High blood pressure is known as the silent killer because the symptoms of the damage that it's doing and the risk that it puts, you don't recognize it. And so that's why knowing your number and keeping your blood pressure under those numbers is so important.
Right. Quit smoking, exercise, reduce your salt intake, all of those common sense things.
Exactly. The same things you do to take care of your heart, you do to prevent a stroke.
Okay. Now, stroke treatment is more advanced than ever, including at your own Mayo Clinic. What can you share with us about what you're doing at the stroke center?
Yeah, the concept of stroke centers is one of the wonderful things that has come up in the last 5 or 10 years in medicine. The ability to treat strokes has changed dramatically. You know, when I graduated from medical school 30 years ago, we really couldn't do very much for patients who were having a stroke. We put them in the hospital. We kind of waited to see how things came out. Now we can actively treat strokes. We have medicines that we can give right in the emergency room, and we have techniques in which we can actually go up with small catheters and small devices and actually pull clots out. By doing so, we can actually reverse strokes while they're happening and get people back to normal.
That's good news. More people surviving a stroke. So in particular in the Southeast, this is important. We're in the stroke belt. The Southeast part of the U.S. is known as the stroke belt. Why is that?
Well, a number of factors. Some of it is genetic, but unfortunately, the majority of it is truly lifestyle. Many of the wonderful foods that we enjoy can be a leading cause of stroke. They have high in fat, high in calories. It's not that we can eat them. The problem is we take large portions. We eat them all the time. Moderation is something that everybody sort of talks about, but it really is a key to a healthy lifestyle.
In fact, in this part of the country, the risk of stroke is 34% higher than the general population. So people in our area really need to take heed. African Americans are the most likely to die from stroke, and the stroke death rate among the Hispanic population is going up as well.
Yes, unfortunately, a lot of that is lifestyle choices, lifestyle. You don't have to run every day. You don't have to do something every day. Walking is a wonderful exercise. It's very good for not only your overall health, but for your heart and your risk of stroke. This is something that's easy to do. You don't have to you don't have to make it to a gym. You don't have to work out 2 or 3 hours a day, as some people do, to be healthy. 20, 30 minutes a day, every day. We all have that much time somewhere. We can find it.
Now, there is something everybody does need to know, even if you are trying to prevent the calamity of a stroke. It's an acronym called FAST, F-A-S-T. Face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, time to call 911. If you see those signs in yourself or a loved one, call 911, right?
Absolutely. The signs of a stroke are just as you said, and strokes start, the clock starts ticking as soon as a stroke begins. Brain cells don't have any reserve, so we start to lose brain cells right away. And you will notice these things. If suddenly someone's face is asymmetric, you can see that easily. Someone's hand, if they drop something or if they kind of clutch at it and can't move it, these are things that are easy to see. If you think someone's having a stroke, then call 911. The truth is, if they're not having a stroke, it's very easy for me to say, nope, we're okay. But if we don't get someone there in time, then unfortunately the effects are often permanent.
Keep that in mind. It is National Stroke Awareness Month. Know that blood pressure number. And Dr. David Miller, thank you, your medical director at Mayo Clinic Comprehensive Stroke Center. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Great advice for all of us. A quick break, and in a moment we will go live to TPC Sawgrass in Ponte Vedra Beach. Look at the Players Championship. What's new this year? And more. That's in a moment.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington reminds you to act fast, whether it's water, mold, or fire damage. ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington, 721-2230, or servprojacksonvillesouth.com, like it never even happened. The 2018 Players Championship returns May 8th through 13th. Witness the competition drama unfold on the island green. Enjoy the beer garden presented by Hoptinger with friends, or watch country artist Luke Combs perform during Military Appreciation Day on Tuesday, May 8th. Tickets at theplayers.com.
President Trump's pick to lead the CIA, was involved with secret prisons and the torture of suspected terrorists. Her defenders say it'll be tough to find someone qualified who wasn't.
She was in compliance with the law of the United States, and if we can't find the ability to confirm somebody with her credentials, the environment in Washington has become poisonous.
Gina Haspel's confirmation hearing this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The White House is standing by their pick to lead the nation's spy agency.
We think that Acting Director Haspel is a highly qualified, uniquely positioned individual to lead the CIA.
But will America's long history of torture ensnare Gina Haspel? That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
It is a story about slavery that has never been told. The first-person narrative of a man believed to be the last captive on a slave ship. His story became the book Barracoon by renowned author Zora Neale Hurston. But it's taken almost a century to release because publishers didn't want to touch it. Until now. Barracoon, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's one of the most anticipated annual events around. The 44th annual Players Championship is this week, and the tournament officially kicks off tomorrow out at Sawgrass in Ponte Vedra Beach. But there's already so much happening as we move through the week. Events to delight golf fans and just lots of socializing and fun. Jared Rice is executive director of the Players Championship, new in the position, and he's on the line now from the best course in golf. Hey, Jared, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on your position, working your way up through the ranks to now be in charge of the Players Championship. Pretty exciting.
It is. And as you know, and you're mentioning the event, and events of this magnitude are come together because of many, many people. So while it's I'm very excited to be in this position. There is 16 full-time people on our staff. There is 500-plus local employees of the PGA Tour that are focused on this property this week, and 2,100 volunteers that are led up by Damon Alento, our volunteer chairman. So that's... by quick math, 2,601, or 2,617. Sorry, it's a little busy morning, but you get the idea. There's,
sure.
there's a lot of folks really pushing to make this a crown jewel for our community.
Yes, and it certainly is. And there's been a real focus on making the Players not just a big sporting event, but also a big social event, not unlike the Kentucky Derby or Speed Week in Daytona. There's so much happening out there. What's new this year that people can keep their eyes out for when they head out?
Sure. I think you make a good point. And for golf fans, they may have heard or know that the golf course is a very, what can be categorized as a democratic style of golf course. That means it doesn't favor any one style of play. It means that you have to execute everything, every shot in your bag very, very well. So it doesn't favor a particular style of golfer. And we have taken that same thinking to the outside the ropes experience and being very diverse in our offerings of benefits for and amenities for fans of all kinds. And those are golf fans. Those are people that are coming out here to be social. There's families. There's foodies that come out. There's a lot of business that's being done out here, both locally and globally. So there's something for everyone. I think that ties very well with the original vision of Commissioner Beaman and Pete Dye. So a lot of new things happening out here this year.
You've got lots of new food options. You've got Military Appreciation Day. Military personnel, retirees, they can come free. You've got the replica 17th hole, the Stadium Village. There's a lot of stuff going on that really, I think, keeps fans interested and engaged as they walk around and take it all in. Sure. A lot of moving parts.
Sure, absolutely. Well, last night, where yesterday was really opening day, if you will, and our competitive rounds start tomorrow. But for opening day is Military Appreciation Day, as you mentioned, and all week, all active, retired, reserve, military, and their dependents are admitted free to the tournament to show their DoD credentials at our ticket windows and redeem that for a hard ticket to enter the tournament. And we had a great presentation of the colors in 17 green with a flyover last night and ended the day with Luke Combs, up-and-coming country artist, award-winning artist, who just rocked the place last night. It was fantastic. Great start to the week. And like you said, one can really enjoy a true taste of Jacksonville when they're here. All the top restaurants in our community that make Northeast Florida unique are participating, or many of them are. And we think that's very important to show why and how this area is different through the fan experience, because an increasingly higher number of our attendees are coming from outside the five county area. So it's a real showcase, like I said earlier, for the region in many, many respects.
Sure. A national, even international base of people coming. Any advice you've got before we let you go, Jared, for people that might be coming out for the first time?
Parking.
Yeah, right.
It always comes to, now is the time, if you haven't already, to focus on how one is coming out to the tournament. We have some marquee groupings with Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, and Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and Rory McIlroy will be playing together on opposite ends of the day tomorrow. So really be thinking about how you come out here, and you can carpool and park for free. Just make sure you download a pass on theplayers.com. You can purchase parking on theplayers.com. And there's ride share opportunities. There's plenty of space for walkers, bikers, golf cart parking. So we're really in that mode where you got to think really, really, really hard about how you're coming out here. And we want everyone to be out here and have a great time and show how Northeast Florida really can welcome world-class athletes and put on a show for the world.
Well, you've got a very busy few days ahead of you, so thanks so much for giving us a few minutes. Have fun, and we'll see you out there.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
He's Jared Rice, the new executive director at the Players Championship. Again, that website, theplayers.com. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.